So when we are having a hard time, we go to our girlfriends, a lot of us, because we want to cry. We want to tell them what's wrong. We want to tell them all the things. And we don't want our girlfriends to fix it or stop it or change it. We just want them to listen. And so I like to remind moms specifically as they're going into those times with their children, we want to fix it. We want to fix it and we want to stop it. And that's normal because it hurts us to see our children so upset.
Getting pregnant and giving birth are two of the most exciting things you can ever hope to experience in this life. The moment you think you could be pregnant, you're frantically searching for all the best information, which is why you're here today. I'm Stephanie King, and with my many years of experience as a professional childbirth educator, doula, and lover of all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, I'm here to make preparing for your birth enjoyable, empowering, and totally easy. Each week, I'll cover different topics, interview professionals, and get into the nitty-gritty birth stories from mamas just like you. And when you're ready for more, you can join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I take you step by step through exactly how to prepare your mind, body, spirit, and partner for a birth you love. So let's get started. It's time. The My Essential Birth postpartum course is here. Whether you're pregnant, just got baby home, or weeks and months into postpartum, this is the course for you. No more wondering what's normal for your body postpartum, if baby's eating or pooping enough, or how to get a good latch. You now have an all-in-one resource where you can click a topic and get the answer. Learn more at myessentialbirth.com/postpartum and add it onto the My Essential Birth course for even less when you bundle them at checkout. Already in the course? Check your student library and add the course for the same discount. I can't wait to support you on your postpartum journey. Okay, this week's reviewer of the week is Claire. That's how her name is written. And she said, "So glad I stumbled upon this. I think I found you while listening to all of the Lily Nichols podcast interviews I could find." And for those of you that are listening now, I'll put the link for Lily Nichols. If you don't know who that is or what we talked about, I'll put that in the show notes for you guys to be able to take a listen to. "Between you and Lily, I have all the pregnancy info I could ever want. I had hypertension and a 38-week induction last labor that ended in a C-section. Ugh. And I'm doing all I can to prevent hypertension the next go around, God willing. Thankful for this podcast to keep me company on my daily 3-mile walks." Way to go, you, for doing your 3-mile walks. "You are knowledgeable, concise, and frankly entertaining." Thank you for that as well. I always laugh because I'm like, I think I'm entertaining, but then I always worry, like, do you guys actually think I'm entertaining? So yay, I'm so glad that you appreciated that, Claire. She said, "Keep up the good work and know that you are changing lives." Thank you for that review. So excited for you guys to all be here. I love reading reviews too. So if you haven't left one, please do so. Today, I have with me Lauren Weber, and she is all about baby sleep. I want to give her a moment to introduce herself, and then we'll kind of dive into a different approach to parenting when it comes to sleep. And we've had a couple of sleep topics on here before, and so I love giving all the information and hearing the different sides, different perspectives, and just having good information for you guys to be able to listen to, work through, and do what's right for you. So without further ado, Lauren, will you take a moment and introduce yourself? Tell us a little about you, your family, your profession, and what you do.
Yeah. So my name is Lauren. I am a 3-time certified pediatric sleep specialist. I also have my Bachelor of Education and worked as a teacher for a number of years with primary age children. I have about 250 hours now in attachment-based specific education, as well as a foundation certificate in self-regulation, and have finished up all the schooling components to be able to hopefully write my exam soon to become an IBCLC. I am a mom to 2 little ones, Isla and Grace. So my business name is Ira Grace Sleep. That's how you can find me. And I have been supporting parents now for, oh my goodness, 8 years, maybe longer, to get sleep without using any sleep training. And I also, have a big presence online on social media. And then I also run a certification course where I'm certified sleep and well-being specialist. And I think that's it for me. I don't know. Yeah.
That's it. As you list off your like laundry list of this is how awesome I am. I love it. I love it. And I didn't know about the IBCLC part of things too. So that's incredible. Holy cow, you are a busy lady.
Well, the crazy thing is I started both at the same time 8 years ago. It's just that I don't come from like a nursing background or anything. So to get my hours to qualify to where I just do 500 clinical hours to finish to be able to write that exam. So slowly but surely I was plugging away, and I really didn't expect how many parents would want sleep support. So it has become such a big focus of my practice. But hopefully soon I will write that exam.
I love that. And I love that people listening are hearing that, because that's what I try to get at when I'm asking, like, or when I'm recommending, like, go to an IBCLC. It's not just your regular lactation consultant that took a couple hours of a course on a weekend, which they have their place. And I mean, right. And that can be like a really excellent first person for you to get to. But when you're coming up to some of these struggles, I'm like, no, you don't understand. IBCLCs are the gold standard. And that's why you just talked about it. 500 hours of and having to write this exam and 8 years. And while you're raising children, like, it's no joke. You know what you're talking about by the time you're qualified.
No. And that doesn't include, as you know, like the schooling component of it. So, you know, going back to school for all the courses that you had to take, plus there was a number of hours in breastfeeding specific education. But I think that's interesting when you say that, just about, you know, parents, one of their first challenges is usually either sleep or feeding. And so the beautiful part about the IBCLC is that it is like a regulated industry, whereas sleep, on the other hand, is not. So I always say a really great, I mean, my sleep certification course is intense. So they're certainly learning everything, and I feel confident about it. But in general, like, if you are looking for support, an IBCLC is an excellent place to go.
Yeah, I love that. So, okay, kind of, and I love hearing the background behind the name too, the Isla Grace, because I'm like, her name is Lauren. I wonder where that came from. And it's your children, which is so special. But talk to us a little bit about your approach to sleep and kind of like, do you have a name for it or what do you call it? What's kind of your philosophy behind it? Walk us through all of that.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because, you know, one of the things is that I went to like a very typical sleep program. So when I first was learning about baby sleep, I went through what I think most sleep trainers go through to become sleep coaches. But the approach that I was learning, which was around using separation-based sleep training, wasn't really resonating or sitting well with me. And so I always like to start by letting people know, I really do believe that you are the expert on your baby. So like, let's start there. I also believe that it really is no one else's business how you parent your children. I really believe that you know what's best. And so when it comes time to sleep, it's very polarizing. I feel like we've got kind of this like cry it out more separation-based sleep training approach on one side. And then on the other side is this very like waited out kind of just don't do anything. And so as much as that waited out may be lovely for parents who don't want to sleep train, at the same time, many of us live in places where parents need to go back to work and they're, you know, needing to get sleep. So what we tried to do is find an approach that allowed parents to get more sleep. So getting the exact same results when you're changing patterns, but without using any separation. So we call it baby-led sleep. Really, I feel like it's like intuitive sleep changes. Like, I hate giving it like a title, because really what we want to do is we want to help parents to understand what does normal infant sleep look like. So there is this huge misconception about how babies sleep. And so unfortunately, a lot of that came from really dated research that was done in like the 80s. On what was at the time, because bottle feeding was pretty typical versus breastfeeding. So they were looking at a lot of bottle-fed infants who, as we know, you know, sometimes that milk is digested a lot slower. So sometimes those babies are getting longer stretches, but also in a time where moms and babies were separated. So I don't know whether anyone was around. I feel like I say like I'm so old.
You are not.
Okay. So remember back in the day when you used to have a baby and they like
took them away and they put them in a nursery and they swaddled them with a bunch of other babies. And, you know, you go to look for your, like, it didn't happen to me. I'm not that old, but most of us, that's what was happening when most of us were born. So we looked at normal infant sleep in a time when A, it was mainly bottle-fed babies, and B, there was a lot of separation. So parents didn't understand, or when they looked at their sleep and we said, hey, this is like normal sleep for babies. But the reality is, it is not. So what we really try to help parents to do is take some of the latest information that we have about infant sleep, help parents to understand what's normal, and then have conversations with parents around what's working and what's not working for them. And then how can we can shift patterns the minute something isn't working, but we do it by increasing contact closeness and proximity versus using separation.
I like that. Do you have, just as we're like talking, it makes me wonder if you have something that you kind of like glance at or in the back of your mind, even as kind of like your own checklist that you go down when you're talking with parents, like new moms, for example, like maybe their concern is sleep, but you being, you know, educated in the IBCLC side of things, is there like a process that you go through in your mind as you're talking with clients or with moms where you're like deducting information or even something that like moms that are listening? For example, we had a mom in our group just this week who was like, I'm 4 weeks postpartum, like baby's not sleeping well. Do you have any recommendations? And that was the question. And I'm like, oh, there's so much more information we need, you know, because like what baby sleeps really great at 4 weeks. And like, you know, I'm going through all these things in my mind. So when people come to you, like, is there kind of like a deduction method or like things that parents can pay attention to or look at that is not just sleep involved?
So if they don't hear, see, or smell us, you know, they're going to, because of that, from an attachment perspective, that's normal. Well, we really like to look at, you know, okay, so the age of the baby, if they're waking every 2 to 3 hours, that's pretty typical. And that's what they're supposed to do. So we want to remember that babies are meant to, especially young babies, stay in a lighter stage of sleep. It's protective. So we want babies to wake up if they're hungry, if they're cold, if they're not breathing. So that is to be expected. When we start to hear parents talking about babies that are waking every hour or every hour and a half, and it's going on to kind of an extended period of time, I mean, we look for things like what's going on with feeding. So if you are a breastfeeding parent, or even if you're a bottle feeding parent, have you reached out to an IBCLC? Is your baby gassy and uncomfortable? Are they snoring? Are they mouth breathing? Are they gaining weight? Are they deep in the same way that they would impact us? So very often we see parents say, and I just know my baby's uncomfortable. Why aren't they sleeping? Well, they're not sleeping because they're uncomfortable. So there's a lot of things that can be happening kind of under the surface that have nothing to do with sleep at all. So if we get to a place where we're saying, okay, well, they're waking every 3 hours and that's pretty typical, then we can talk about shifting patterns if it's not working for a parent. But at the same time, there's a lot of babies who have things that are going on that have nothing to do with sleep. And the majority of them, it is feeding related. So those two, feeding and sleep, go hand in hand.
That's awesome. That's really good information, I think, for moms to hear and kind of have in the back of their mind as you pregnant moms are listening right now. Kind of put that in the back of your mind that those two go together. I love that. So when you're talking to moms about sleeping, you talk about kind of this intuitive, do you go over bed sharing versus co-sleeping versus being in another room? Can you take a moment and kind of speak to that?
Yeah, this is a hot topic. This is very, people get that, like, it ruffles feathers. So yes. I want to start with a couple of things. First of all, bed sharing is the norm in the majority of the world. So let's just put that out there. This is a fact.
Yes.
It's just like it is. And some of that is culturally, that is a part of how parents sleep with their babies. They don't have a term for it. They don't call it co-sleeping or bed sharing or whatever. It's just sleeping. So it's just like naturally part of where babies and how babies sleep. The other thing is a lot of people cannot afford a separate sleep space or a separate sleep surface. There are other families where, you know, they're living in countries that aren't safe. So the idea of putting a baby in a separate sleep surface or down the hall or whatever that might be is just not going to happen. So I always just want to start with the fact that it is the norm. A lot of medical professionals across the board, and I have heard the American Association of Pediatrics come out and say it as well, is like, if there is any chance that you are going to fall asleep with your baby in the middle of the night on a chair, on a couch, in a bed that has not been prepared for bed sharing with a partner who does not know the baby is coming into the bed, you are better off to prepare your space for safe bed sharing than not. So I don't know anybody who isn't in that risky category, right? Unless you're really waking up once a night or twice a night and you're somebody who can wake up, do the feed, it's a quick feed and your baby's back to sleep. So this is just something to keep in mind. Now, there are rules around bed sharing to make it safer. So it's interesting because Professor James McKenna is one of the only people to have actually studied mothers and babies sleeping in a lab. So if you really want to go to the expert on bed sharing, you want to go to him. So he has an incredible book as well as a website called Safe Infant Sleep is his book. And you can look him up. You can just Google him and he's got an incredible website that gives you all sorts of information on safe sleep. And he's pretty great about answering questions. So you can email him as well. But if you are intending to bed share, it is important to be making sure that your space is set up for safe sleep. So the Safe Sleep 7, which is by Lela Chidney, kind of lists some of those rules. Number one is that it needs to be a sober parent. It needs to be non-smoking parent. And it also really should be a healthy full-term baby is another one of the rules for that safe sleep. Lightly dressed on a hard, firm mattress. So we don't want a soft mattress. This one ruffles feathers as well. So I'm just going to say it, but we'll have the conversation about it and the reason why. So ideally, if you are bed sharing or you're breast sleeping, you are a breastfeeding parent. And so there's a couple of reasons for this. And if you ask Professor McKenna, he's really great about being clear about this. A, took him forever just to get the funds to do the research that he was able to do. And he only studied breastfeeding parents. So we don't actually have any research. We don't have anybody who's looked at that. It's all we have to competently say that this next to the smell of breast milk. So if you are a breastfeeding parent, they're not going to like scooch to the bottom of the bed, which obviously can be dangerous. And again, we have that breast milk is digested a little bit quicker. Babies are in a little bit of a lighter stage of sleep. So it just makes it safer sleep.
That's awesome. Yes, you're totally right. I love that you started with this is the norm and it's an American thing and a new age American thing for us to talk about how we should immediately from the beginning separate. And it's interesting because I mean, I've talked with many a mom and I'm one of them who I was not comfortable with that. I wanted my baby near me. I actually felt safer, more comfortable, more secure with my baby near me. And we did, I mean, out of concern, like we bought like a little co-sleeper that went in between my husband and I. He hated it. My baby was like, you know, nobody slept when he did that. I'm like, okay, so we put the bassinet next to the bed. Nobody slept. And so finally I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm going to pull him into my bed. Like I'm ending up nursing him every couple hours anyways. And oh my goodness, it was like, we're finally getting sleep. Everybody's sleeping. Husband's sleeping, baby's sleeping, I'm sleeping. And then figuring out, like at first I was, you know, nursing on one side and then putting my baby on my chest and rolling to the other side and nursing on the other side. And once I figured out I could nurse on one side and then just lean over and give them the other breast, I was like, man, I am like living it up. This is it. So, but yeah, it's true. It is the norm and we've made it this big, scary thing here. And it's just not the case. And even with like a softer bed, like you were talking about, you know, I know that they have these little, like we use like a, they were, I think they were like pee pads that like go under the baby, but not the soft ones, like the dog pads that we have. It was a cloth, like a thicker, flat cloth, kind of hard that went under him. And so even though we had a softer sleep service that gave him, my baby that was just right next to me, I could stick that under him and it gave him that solid space, even though I was kind of on that comfier spot. So we could still bed share even in that situation. But yes, that it was good information. It's such good information. And we actually talk about Safe Sleep 7 in the postpartum course that we have. So that's just excellent. I'm so excited.
It is at this point, like I feel like I get frustrated. First of all, I remind parents to look at where the information is coming from and who is to benefit. So a lot of the people that advocate for no bed sharing at all also create $1,500 bassinet for you to use. Or swaddles or products, you know, to get babies to sleep
away from the parents. And the reality is that if you're bed sharing, you don't need any of those products. And then, you know, who's making the money? The other thing that I would encourage parents to do now, because I feel like the research is coming out and it's pretty clear, is a lot of parents have been told that bed sharing causes SIDS or leads to SIDS. There is some interesting, and maybe we can link it or I'll send it to you, but there is some really interesting research done by BASIS and SIDS, or BASIS and UNICEF. And they were looking at babies in the UK. And I think that was the year was 2019. And they said that 50% of SIDS bed sharing was not cause. Now, the problem becomes is that, you know, we often talk about co-sleeping as leading to SIDS or leading to suffocation. Co-sleeping is sleeping within sensory proximity to the baby. Bed sharing is sleeping on the same sleep surface. So one of the things that is not differentiated in a lot of that information and that research is the fact that co-sleeping can be a couch. Co-sleeping can be a rocker. Co-sleeping can be or bed sharing, and there's no differentiation. Like, was the parent sober? Did the partner in the bed know that the baby was there? Were they sleeping on a firm mattress? So, you know, I always say to parents, you know, it is important to think about that. Like, how many babies, when it comes time to suffocation against SIDS, and like, and there is some really great research now too about SIDS being a failure to rouse, not related to the environment, but being a failure to rouse. But how many of those babies that are grouped in this research had non-smoking, breastfeeding, firm mattress, lightly dressed, partner knew they were in the bed, prepared the space for safe sleep? You know, these are questions that are important to ask, right? And so the reality is like, hey, don't bed share with your baby. It's never safe. Buy the $1,500 rocker baby bed over here and then your baby sleep, right? So,
right. Yeah.
It's important to ask those questions. You got to think about where's the information coming from? Who does it benefit? And I think I really will say this quite firmly, I guess it is absolutely irresponsible to withhold safe bed sharing information from parents. Just is.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'm glad you said that. I want to take a moment too. You talked about, I don't know if it's like marketing or the word is not coming to me, but kind of how you're saying, like, pay attention to where the information is coming from. And it reminds me, you know, this big push that we had about fed is best. Do you remember that? And I mean, it's still going, but this was like a big thing a couple years ago. And the people behind that were the formula companies. Was it Similac that was like the fed is best? Or anyways, it was one of the formula companies, and it was this big thing, like, you know, stop going after these formula feeding moms and all this. And it's like, we're not doing that, but you're saying that. And it's to say that, like, formula feeding is this great thing and it's great that it exists, but it's not for every mom. And breastfeeding is, you know, nutritionally, it is the best thing for babies. So we should be educating, you know, if you can't breastfeed, here's your options. But it's not, it's like fed is the very baseline. Like, that's how you keep a baby alive. Like, obviously, we're all going to agree with that, you know. But yeah, watching just the, like, marketing and stuff it's so interesting to me how, and then we, like, you know, as consumers, like, get on these trains and we don't even realize, like, what the kind of damage that we end up doing some of the time. So yeah, I think that's good information.
And this is true in the sleep world too. And I think, like, I oftentimes say to parents, I feel sad in a way that I have the job that I have, which is to basically tell parents that they need to follow their heart and their intuition. Like, it's sad that that is the job, because even the sleep information. So we take this information from the 1980s that's not true anymore, that, by the way, was, like, kind of created. The books that were from the 80s on sleep were by male physicians, didn't take care of their own babies. In a time when we really didn't know what babies needed or who babies were. And says, well, my baby doesn't do that. They wake up every 3 hours and they want to be fed and they want to be changed and they want to snuggle and they want contact and they want closeness. And then we say, well, doing so, you better hire someone so that we can tell them what to do. You know, it's a mess.
Okay, so let's get back on track. Sorry, that was my own thing that I like took us off for a second. But how about for women that are listening, maybe they're postpartum or going to be postpartum, and they come up to some of these sleep challenges that are not just kind of what you described, where, you know, like, there, what are some challenges that you regularly see that you help correct, that moms can implement today if they're listening here? Some of those kind of basic things.
If a baby is waking up hourly or every hour and a half, this to me is a red flag that something needs to be addressed and it's something underlying. So the first thing that I always say to parents is, if that is your gut feeling, push it. Like, get the answers. So if your baby is gassy, if they seem to be taking like really short, frequent feeds and never seem to be full or satisfied, if they're getting frustrated with the breast, if they are, you know, spilling milk out the sides of their mouth, if they seem uncomfortable, or, well, actually, we'll start there. The first place that I always say is go book in with an IBCLC. Go see an IBCLC. Second big one that we see a lot is snoring and mouth breathing. So when we're sleeping, our mouth should be sealed shut, our lips should be sealed shut, and our tongue should be pressed against the roof of your mouth. That is where our That's where everything's supposed to sit. And the reason is because when the tongue pushes against the roof of the mouth, it helps our palate right. to form nice and wide. If our palate isn't nice and wide, then it's going to form narrow. It's going to come up into our nasal cavity. And then that's going to impact our ability to be able to breathe properly through our nose. So if your tongue, anyone who's listening, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to embarrass myself. But anyways, listening, you can try and snore with your tongue pressed against the roof of your mouth. You can't do it. You can only snore if your tongue is down. And so one of the things to know is that if your baby is breathing through their mouth, or if you are breathing through your mouth, or if anyone's snoring, it means that you're not breathing properly. And so anytime you then go to get into kind of like a deeper stage of sleep, and babies are older and they're moving into those deeper stages of sleep, the body's going to wake them up. So you start to see that it's like almost like they do a half the sleep cycle and then they're up. And that's protective. The body says, you're not breathing properly, so we're going to wake you up. So if that's the case, what you're really looking for is an airway health specialist. And so pediatric dentists can be, some can be. If it's related to the tongue and where the tongue's sitting in the mouth and tongue function, then an IBCLC is actually a really great place to start as well. So they're always a good resource for that. So we start with that. And then the other big part is just, or it is recommended to be room sharing, especially for the first year. So even if you're not bed sharing, to be able to be room sharing is number one. But, you know, parents get into this place of, well, I don't want to feed to sleep, because if I feed to sleep, then I'm going to have to feed to sleep for forever. And it's a bad habit. So the majority of parents that I'm working with are just coming to me saying like, hey, I want to bring my partner into the bedtime routine. I don't want to feed to sleep. Or every time my baby wakes up overnight, I'm feeding. And ideally, I'd like someone else to come in, or, you know, for maybe it's just my baby's just waking up for a feed. So when that happens, we like to just help parents to shift patterns around the things that aren't working, in the same way you would when your child is 18 and you're making a change, is just to support our children rely on patterns and predictability. So if we always, you know, let's say our baby's up in the middle of the night and we're bouncing and we're frustrated, you know, maybe instead of bouncing this time, we're just going to hold them and say, I know you're really frustrated. I know you want me to bounce. I'm right here. I hear you. I hear that frustration. I'm going to just hold you for a little bit. And then really getting into that place of just being like, okay, we're making a change because something's not working. Again, bounce as long as you want to bounce. And then when it's not working anymore, I'm just going to hold and support you. I love you. I'm right here. Instead of using separation, I love you. I'm right here. And this isn't timed. It's not 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off. Put your baby down. Don't look at your baby. Don't do this. Don't do that. It's really just saying to yourself all of this stuff. This is changes, right? So the same thing, the same way that we would support anyone else who's having a hard time that needs to go, that we need to make a change. And so usually what happens is that as we're able to continue doing that, it's not a quick fix, but, you know, I'm going to bounce for a bit and then I'm going to hold you for a bit and I'm going to listen to you. And I know you're really frustrated. And then you know, oh, I can see you're getting really upset. Let's bounce a little bit more. And then I'm going to hold you. And just slowly moving through supporting our children through that change. And I'm going to support you through that because I know that you and your little brain rely on patterns and we're shifting and changing a pattern and you're upset.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I love that because that's something that every mom can do today, no matter where she's at with that sleep journey. So that's really helpful.
And I think I will comment on this, like one of the biggest challenges with this approach. Say approach. It's not an approach. We're making changes and we're going to support you through it. Is that most parents are very uncomfortable with emotion. So most of us, and again, this is like where I feel like I'm really old, but most of us grew up with parents who, when we shared and expressed a level of frustration or sadness or anger, we were sent away. Mm-hmm. So most of us were in the timeout, separation, leave you to figure it out on your own, cry, 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 no co-regulation at all with the parent, just your behavior, your crying, your upset, your angering children, like young children cannot regulate their emotions. They cannot do that. So we need to co-regulate, meaning that they need to be provided with multiple opportunities to regulate with a parent before they can actually do it themselves. Hmm. So here we are trying to support emotion when we ourselves never got the support that we needed through emotion. So holding a baby, like I had to think about how crazy it is. You know, when after we give birth, right? And we went through this crazy experience. So no one actually thinks about the fact that the baby also went through this experience, right? So even after birth, to be able to hold them and like let them share all of that with you and to be able to like be present and be like, I hear you. You know, most of us can't handle that supporting of the emotion, holding baby, listening to them. So sleep training or using separation feels a lot easier and better because we don't have to be there, right? So we can put them down and they can cry, but we can plug our ears. I mean, for some moms, it's so bad that they leave the house, but that it's because they can't handle the emotion. But what I say to parents is, by the way, it does not get easier when they're toddlers. Like when you say red cup and they want the blue cup, you're going to have the same amount of emotion as what you're dealing with right now. So I would rather parents like start practicing now and you know, to say like something's not working for our family. We need to make a change. I hear you that you're frustrated, but guess what? I'm right here. And like even having these conversations in your head, like whatever you need to tell yourself just to try to remain calm.
I like that. It was actually, I know I told you before we jumped on here that I was on your Instagram page and it was the video, I like got emotional and I'm like, I have to get off your page. The video of that dad, there's a video that you have of a dad and his daughter's like, what, 1.5? She's just little. And she's like having what we would call like a tantrum. You know, she's like losing it. She's just not regulated, like you say, and she's screaming and all this. The dad's just sitting there with her. And, you know, at first she's like pushing him away and stuff. And anyways, there's like this back and forth. Then she's like standing on him and crying and kicking her feet and crawling over him. And he's not stopping her. He's not shushing her. He's not setting her down in her place or removing himself or her. And by the end, she like finally, you know, has it out and hugs him. And so I'm just like bawling, right? Because I'm like, that's the parent I want to be. Like that is exactly how I want to sit and hold space for this little child to like work through whatever they're going through. But as you said, that's not likely how we were raised or the situations that we had. And so, you know, the other side of that too, and kind of the question that I have popping up is, it's kind of twofold. One, for parents that didn't have this in their youth, just for one reason or another, what can we do? Is this like a maybe we need some therapy thing? Do you have some recommendations or ideas for parents that haven't had that but want to do that for their child? And the other side of that is sometimes no matter how much you want to be that parent, you can't in that moment. It's too upsetting for you or you're not in a good mental space for whatever the reason you cannot do that in that moment. It is safer for you to be in a different space or to remove yourself. So what's your recommendation there?
Yeah. So first of all, I would say give yourself grace. Like what that dad is doing in that video for anyone who wants to go and watch it. I mean, that is unbelievable. It is a moment in a day. Like I happen to have this not like. So let's start there. The first thing is an understanding. Like, you know, an understanding of the fact that you didn't get this. This is what you want to give your child, but you didn't get it. So you know, again, having some grace. The other thing I like to say to parents is to practice small moments. So especially as you know, you're getting past that, like when you're like 10, 11, 12 months, you know, practicing moments of being able to support your little one when they're having those big feelings, usually during the day, because there's another distraction. So the middle of the night is not a good time to practice. Also a reminder that the minute you're not okay, they're feeling that you're not okay. So, you know, even if it's like 3 seconds or 5 seconds, you know, to be able, I'm going to say it, I mean, you cut this out. But women in general, so when we are having a hard time, we go to our girlfriends, a lot of us, because we want to cry. We want to tell them what's wrong. We want to tell them all the things. And we don't want our girlfriends to fix it or stop it or change it. We just want them to listen. And so I like to remind moms specifically as they're going into those times with their children, we want to fix it. We want to fix it and we want to stop it. And that's normal because it hurts us to see our children so upset. But I like to remind moms about kind of like thinking about it as be for them that safe place of where they can share and express and let it all out. And you're just there to hold space for that. But again, start with small moments, feeling great. They're not feeling great. So if you're trying to change something like bouncing and you are holding, it's been 3 seconds and all of a sudden you're feeling panicked, bounce again and start again the next day. Try it again the next day. Like it doesn't have to be an all or nothing. And small bits when they're little is amazing because then by the time they get to be toddlers, you're going to be in that place to be able to hold space. Now, this is different. You're feeling overwhelmed. It's okay to put your little one down and say, I just need to have a breather. I like to sit. I remember sitting in the chair. And I think sometimes we think our little ones are almost less than, or like we can't figure them out because they're smaller than us. That's not the case at all. So I remember sitting in the chair with my oldest and I just would rock back and forth. And at this point, she had so much going on. But I remember just sitting in the chair with her and she was telling me all, she's probably trying to tell me, I'm not peeing properly and my tummy hurts and all this. But I would sit there and I just would tell her about my day, the whole day. And then I would say, you know, you woke up and you were upset and you were screaming. And then we went to the park and then we did this and then we did that. And it calmed me, like just to, she's upset with me. I'm trying to talk her through it, you know, and talk her through my day. Can't figure out what it is, but I'm right here and I'm with you and I love you. And again, this is why we have amazing, like, moms have amazing techniques for sleep. If you can rock or walk or do all those amazing things, those are still beautiful things to do because we can't always support emotion. So as you're navigating this and you're starting this, just do small little bits.
Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you. What are some things that you think women need to know, kind of like either in general or, I mean, in regards to sleep, though, like what are some things that really come to mind when you're speaking with women that you feel like just really resonates with you, that like if you knew these things, it might be a little bit easier for you?
So your baby is supposed to wake up a lot in the first year. They are. When they're hungry, when they're cold, when they're wet, when they're uncomfortable, when they need a cuddle and a snuggle. And I think sometimes we look at needs like it's fine if they need a feed and a diaper change because they're wet and they're hungry. But it's not fine if they need a cuddle and a snuggle. So sometimes we think that the two of them are separate, but they're not. So our baby has a need for contact, closeness, and proximity. That is a normal, healthy need. And again, before you get questions about, well, my baby's happy to sleep in the crib, there are some babies who have a temperament that is just pretty easygoing. They're happy to be in their crib, or there might be periods of time when they're happy to be in their crib. So this is one thing. The other thing is sleep is not linear. So it's not like, oh, in the first month, they were waking 3 times at night. And so then in the second month, they should only be waking 2. Like, just like sometimes we go through periods of time where we're up more often, or we have a harder time falling asleep, or we're uncomfortable or whatever it might be. Same for our baby. The other thing is, if your baby's doing it, it's probably normal. The other thing is to call in a partner. If you have one, call in a partner. So one of the really important things to know is that, you know, we need a village if we can build one. And so having your partner step in whenever they can and not being on top of them about how to put baby back to sleep. They're going to have to find their own way, especially if you're a breastfeeding parent and they're non-breastfeeding parent, to put your little one back to sleep
Let them figure that out on their own if you want them to continue stepping in and helping. And I don't know, those are the big ones. Yeah, and it's also, again, it's normal babies want to be close to you. It's normal that they sleep better than when they're with you, contrary to popular belief, but it's garbage. I heard somebody say motion sleep is less restorative. We actually have, and you can look this up yourself, anyone wants to look it up, but that motion not only helps us fall asleep faster, but stay in a, like a deeper state of sleep. So
interesting. I like all that too. I love that you added in there about your partner to like let them figure out how to put baby back to sleep without you being like, wait, do this, try this, do that. Because I can totally relate to that. And it's true. It's like they're going to want to do it less then. So do you actually want help? Like, let them figure it out. Oh, I love that so much. You also talked about tuning out noise, trusting your intuition, which I thought was like super solid. I know we talked about that at the beginning, but that's something that's really important to me too. I talk to women about it all day long, particularly when we're talking about pregnancy and birth. You know, it's the same thing. It's mother's intuition once that baby's born too, and in utero. But I think that's really important, trusting that. Just like you're saying, like if something doesn't feel right, if something's wrong, if it's nagging you, you know, there's probably something there. Like, let's make a change. And then you talked about too, and that was at the very beginning too, but being, you're the expert on your baby. And I think that goes along with intuition. But, you know, I mean, you can bring your baby to a pediatrician that sees hundreds of babies all day long. However, they don't see your baby 24/7. And I think that's a huge difference, because just like with everything, there's a range of normal. But babies and people are individual, and you know your baby best, and you are the expert on your child. And so I think being with a provider or anybody that you're going to lean into, whether that's an IBCLC or a sleep expert or whoever, having somebody that respects that and leans on mom for all of that information and care before offering any advice or clinical, you know, anything, I think is really important too.
And a practitioner's job is to give you information on both sides, whatever the topic is, and let you make the decision. Because really, the role of a community or a village, or, you know, back in the days, having like grandparents and aunts and uncles and everybody like who came together to take care of mom and baby. And now we don't have that. Is that the more information you receive, the more you just feel paralyzed at her than anybody else. And that, you know, again, if something feels wrong or it feels off, or there someone's saying it's wrong and it doesn't feel wrong or it's not off, you know, these are all things that there's no decision that ever needs to be rushed into quickly. It's okay for you to sit with things for a while and figure out what makes sense for you. But it is your child, especially in the middle of the night. Like, unless you're coming to my house at 3 a.m. and offering to help, I don't really want your advice. So, you know, I think parents, you know, the more you can just kind of focus on what works for your family, what works best for your family, the better.
Something I find myself encouraging moms to do a lot is, you know, if nobody else were here, if you didn't have to answer to anybody, if you were alone with your little baby or your little family, what would you do? You know, and kind of like lean into that. You know, are you making these decisions based off of, well, I'm going to have to check in with my pediatrician and he's going to ask, okay, but have you checked in with yourself? How do you feel about this decision? You know, you have been awesome today. I greatly appreciate your time, your knowledge, your energy. Thank you so much. And Lauren has been so kind as to offer us a free downloadable PDF. So within this lesson, she's got an entire PDF that goes over contact napping. Do you want to talk about that just for a moment? And then tell everybody where they can contact you, find you, ask you questions, all of that stuff. And if you will take a moment and talk about the course that you have as well, is this for like moms to take? Would it be for doulas to take? Tell us all about that too.
Yeah. So the PDF that I have is about contact napping, just why babies contact, like why they feel safest when they're closest to us. So I wanted to kind of give an explanation if parents just want to know, hey, why is it? And I love it and I want to keep doing it. But then I also give some tips in the download if you're looking to shift or make a change. I understand we can't be doing that all the time for a lot of parents, which is okay. And again, this is why this approach is, it's non-judgmental. Do it or don't do it. If you don't want to do it, this is how you shift it. And if you want to shift it, it's no one else's business. And you just need to do what works best for you. So that's that part. You can find me, I'm I guess probably most active on Instagram. So it's at Isla Grace Sleep. So ISLAGRACE Sleep. And I'm there. I usually collect questions once a week and try to answer as best I can.
I also have several sleep courses for parents. So I have a night weaning course, toddler bedtime battles course, my sleep without sleep training course. And my favorite course is Understand was transformative, in my opinion, for that relationship with baby or toddler or child. So my certification course is for anybody who wants to take it. So it is currently, and I giggle when I say this because we just added another week. So it's now 21 weeks. It's about 147 modules, started at 30 module Kenna, on bed sharing safety. But we pulled in, I pulled in all the experts in the field on everything.
Wow.
Then sleep, but it's not really. So we talk about attachment and like you name it. We've got an IBCLC to talk about feeding related specific things. So it is the most, and I can say it's confidently the most comprehensive course that exists. It takes about 6 months to finish. You do not need any prerequisites. If you are already certified to work with babies and parents in some capacity, we do offer a discount for anybody who's in that situation. So you just have to email us.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. And I hope people connect with you because it's been such a pleasure. So thank you.
If you loved what you heard today, the very best way to support this podcast and help other moms to find it is to leave a quick review. I read one at the beginning of the episodes and I would love for yours to be next. And if you're ready for even more pregnancy, birth, and postpartum goodness, come join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I will hold your hand and walk you through pregnancy and birth step by step so you're totally prepared for a birth you'll love. See you next week.